Welcome to The Human Way. I'm your host, Matt Havens. This is a podcast focused on people doing good by focusing on the similarities that we all share instead of what pulls us apart. At the end of the day, we're all human. So let's dive in. So how can we communicate more genuinely? And other lessons learned from the Texas snowpocalypse. Everybody, I'm excited to be here. Welcome to another edition of The Human Way. I'm your host, Matt Havens. And I just want to be real with y'all. It has been a week. It's been a great week in a lot of ways. And I say that because in this past week, we're recording this right after the Texas snowpocalypse of 2021, which I think we will be talking about, at least in Texas, for quite some time. But I say it was a great week because we saw humanity, and we saw humanity in action in so many ways. It's unfortunate that sometimes it takes a negative event for that to come out, but it really came out in a lot of positive ways, and that's something that I'm going to try to take with me and remember from what we just experienced here. So first and foremost, my family and I, we are extremely blessed, grateful, all the adjectives that you can imagine, because coming out of this crazy winter storm in Texas that they're not prepared for, we were extremely lucky. We experienced a lot of things that people experienced, but I think we avoided the most disastrous of ones. So for those of you who might be listening that aren't from Texas, or you're like me, you're a transplant from northern states that are used to snow, let me just sort of recap what we just went through. Starting Sunday night, like a week ago Sunday night, that's when, you know, we knew storms were going to be coming through. And if Texas is even going to sniff the idea of snow, everything starts to shut down. And I'll give you an example, because it was about 2 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, there was the tiniest of snow flurries. Tiniest of snow flurries that we had on a Saturday about 11 o'clock in the afternoon. My wife and I were at the gym with our kids. Our kids were at, you know, the daycare at the gym, and we got called down, you know, 15 minutes into our gym experience to say, we got to come pick up the kids. Now, as a parent, my first thought was, what did my kids do? Like, who'd they punch? Who am I going to have to apologize to? But no, we get down there and we said, hey, what's going on? They said, oh, well, we're closing the daycare because it's snowing outside. And I looked out the window and I'm like, I'm telling you, this was nothing. Like, not even, I don't even think it was going to land on the ground and actually stick as snow in any capacity. But that's what Texas does, right? When you're going to get snow, everybody get home, hunker down, because they're not prepared for it. The roads aren't going to be ready. People don't know how to drive in it, all those things. So this past Sunday night, when we're getting these storms and we're seeing, okay, it's going to be bigger, then certainly, yes, you know, you recognize that, all right, this might be bigger than we're used to. And so the temperatures really start to drop. I mean, you can feel the cold front come in. And we go to sleep that night, Sunday night, going into Monday. And at about 2 o'clock in the morning, I am completely woken up out of a dead sleep because every single fire alarm in our house is going off. Not just one, every single one in the house is going off. So we jump out of bed. We think there's a fire. Run out the room. My kids run out of their room. We don't see or smell anything, right? But it's just the fire alarms are all going off. And so quickly start to like, okay, what's going on? And then I realize the power's out. Okay. So now our power's gone out plenty of times before. I've never experienced a full black, like a full on assault on my fire alarms just because the power out, but that's what happened. And, so start going through trying to figure out maybe which one's going off. And obviously one of them's tripping the other one. So how do I do this? And then the power comes back on and they stop. So now we're all, you know, awake in the middle of the night, but it's like, okay, kids go back to bed. It was just a power outage. You know, no big deal. It's back on. We should be fine. Lay back down. 20 minutes later, happens again. All the fire alarms go off. Now it's like, okay, what's going on? Power's out again. So it's like something's happening. We still don't really know, nor did we anticipate any of this happening. And so, okay, now the fire alarms are still going off. I can't turn them off. I'm starting to take batteries out. and try to figure out what's going on. Well, my wife's jumping on, and now we're starting to see some information coming through, like on Twitter and things, that there's going to be, you know, rolling power outages because of the cold. So it's like, I don't quite understand that, but okay, whatever. So the power comes back on again, fire alarms go off. And then this time I just like waited because I wanted to see if this is going to happen again. I'm still trying to get my kids back to sleep. And sure enough, 20 minutes later, it happens again. So at this point, now after the third fire alarm in the middle of the night, I go and literally disconnect every single fire alarm in our house, which is, you know, a fun experiment to do in the dark when you're tired and trying to get up on a 10-foot ladder to take some of these things off. But, you know, whatever, we accomplished that. And now I spend the rest of the night, basically, because now I'm just wide awake, spend the rest of the night trying to figure out, okay, is this what's to expect? And come to learn, and, you know, became a Twitter follower of ERCOT and our electric company, which is not normally a social media profile I thought that we'd have to follow, you know, but we did. And I learned that, you know, there's going to be these rolling blackouts because apparently Texas's electrical grid is so overwhelmed that they can't, you know, they're worried it's going to basically be gone forever or be gone for a long period of time. So we go back to bed eventually, wake up. And now that started what became 4 days of constant power outages. When I say constant, it was just like it was in the middle of that night. It was, we got 20 minutes of power. It would go out for 10 or 15 minutes. And this continued for 4 days. So I'll be honest, we tried to make the best of it. You know, we tried to, like, you know, when the power comes back on, it was a mad dash to see who could start the coffee pot, who could, you know, we have all electric cookware in the house. So if we wanted to cook the kids breakfast or something for us and warm it up, you know, you had to get it in there and get it done. And maybe half the time we couldn't even finish cooking something before the power went back out again. And then about, I think it was maybe Monday afternoon, maybe Tuesday, we also completely lost internet in our house and we completely lost cell coverage. So at no point could I could barely send a text message, and it would sometimes take about 15 minutes for that text message to send. I couldn't get back on the internet to see what was going on, to see if, you know, there was an update for when we could expect things. And in addition to that, in Texas, the other thing that you have to really, really worry about with these cold temperatures is you have to worry about all the pipes in your house. You have to worry about things freezing, bursting. And so that's this constant fear that with 4 days of expected super low temperatures, where none of the pipes around here are insulated like they are up north, and, you know, they're not used to handling this, things are busting left and right. So as we're going through this power outage thing, we still have water, so that was a plus, because by Monday, our neighbors are starting to have freeze pipes. We do have a pool in the backyard, and in Texas, you don't drain those pools because it's warm enough year-round, so your pump just has to keep circulating water. And if it's not circulating enough water or it gets too cold, then you get a frozen ice pool, which means everything's going to break. That's going to crack the tiles. It's going to bust the pipes underground. It's going to be a huge undertaking. So you're constantly trying to figure out, what can I do? And if you go online and see some people's stories, you know, they're sitting there standing on top of their pool, trying to break the ice with shovels and wrapping pipes and things like that. So luckily we were, you know, doing okay from that department. We had water in the house, unlike so many other people around here. But, you know, also just the trouble was, we just couldn't communicate. We couldn't communicate and see how other people were doing. We had to, you know, we'd have to physically, luckily I've got a 4-wheel drive car and I'm used to driving in the snow growing up in the Midwest. So we'd have to drive over to people's houses and see how they're doing. And, you know, but where I say all this to say, it appears like we're on the other side of this now. It's warm temperatures again. Things are unthawing. People are finding out if they have busted pipes they didn't know yet. So there's still a lot of work to be done here. But all in all, my family was extremely blessed. We were extremely lucky to get through this. But when I say that we saw humanity, it takes events like this sometimes to see the good that is in every single one of us, to see the good that is in people who sometimes maybe are at differences with each other. Because amidst all of this going on, you know, in our neighborhood and neighborhoods all across Texas, you know, people are checking in with those that had bad situations, with those that had frozen pipes and couldn't get water into their house, with those that were without power. Because that's the weird thing about this whole Texas grid situation is literally from where our house is, less than a mile away, there was homes that never lost power. Less than a mile away, there was also homes that never got power at all. I mean, we at least got it for 20 minutes at a time, but there were some that were without power for multiple days. And when the temperatures are in the teens and the wind chill below zero, your house temperature can drop real quick. So some of these people are living in their home with maybe no water and no heat, and it's 30 degrees in their house. And so you saw people just stepping up and being human with each other and inviting them over saying, hey, we have some power to house, come stay the night. Or you don't have any water in your house and you want to stay, let us bring you over buckets of water so that you can fill the toilets, that you can, you know, use it to cook. And so you just saw people stepping up in so many ways. We've seen stories. There was a story I read about a delivery driver in, I believe it was Austin, who on Sunday, right before things were hitting, she was out making deliveries kind of before the weather really hit, but it came on so quick that during one of her deliveries, her car got stuck. She couldn't get up a hill. And because she couldn't get up a hill and they couldn't get a tow driver there to get them out because of the conditions, the family that she delivered that package to took her in for 5 days. For 5 days, she stayed with them because that was the right thing to do. It wasn't good to send them off to a hotel where maybe the power was going to go out there. You know, they took this person into their home that they had never met before because that's what it means to be human with each other. So I wish it didn't take these situations to come along to, you know, see the light, but I'm encouraged by the good. I'm encouraged by the good, by the humanity that we saw within it. And so I do have to ask myself though, like, what can we learn through this? And there's the obvious things like be grateful for what you got. You know, I always tell my kids, like, is this a little thing or a big thing? And what we just experienced, even if we were to burst pipes, at the end of the day, it's still a little thing. Things can be replaced. It might take some money to do that, and hopefully you saved for it and all those things. But in the grand scheme of things, unless there was a situation of loss of life, like we can get through this. So there's certainly lessons like that. But also, I think there's a lesson in how we communicate more genuinely in every day, but certainly in times of crisis or stress that people are experiencing. And I'm reminded of like so much how oftentimes we communicate when there's bigger moments like this. I mean, I saw it in the corporate world all the time where, you know, communication strategies are developed and they're cascaded from the top levels of an organization down. And sometimes they're just being read to you because, you know, you want to make sure you get the right messaging done. And I'll be honest, like those types of communication strategies don't feel very genuine. And I saw one here during the snowpocalypse that also didn't feel very genuine. There's the cases of certainly like the political side of things and politicians from both sides of the aisle. You know, when they're talking about what's going on, it feels like people are just talking to say things, not really talking to help or to gain clarity and understanding. And not to lambast, you know, the entity, the organization, because I know they were trying really hard. But the communications that Texans got from ERCOT were just kind of comical at times. ERCOT is the organization that is responsible for the electrical grid in Texas. Because in Texas, the rest of the country, they operate off of two. But Texas is like, hey, we're our own thing. Let's just have one for our state. Woohoo! sorry, that's my Midwest in me. It's like, can't we just join together and be one? But the communications that we got from ERCOT were confusing and just lacked that human component. You can go on their Twitter feed right now. And mind you, so much of Texas didn't have cell coverage or, you know, there were times where maybe I could get like 5 or 10 minutes of the internet. And when I noticed that maybe that was happening on my cell phone, then I would quickly try to get an update of, well, how long are these outages going to continue? And you'd have to go to ERCOT to get that. And if you go on your Twitter feed, their Twitter feed, and listen to the communications that they were sending out, it was things like, oh, we've got some load shedding issues going on. I don't work in electrical grids, nor does 99% of this state. What does that mean? And they're tossing out numbers of MWs, which I'm assuming are megawatts of energy. Like, oh, hey, we've got 18,000 megawatts of energy. Is that good? Is that bad? Is that too much? Not enough? How many megawatts are we supposed to have? I don't know. And so you just go through the communications and it's like, man, this isn't how we communicate. This isn't how we communicate like people. Like, tell us the information we need and tell it in a way that people can understand. And so as I've been thinking about that, like, how do we communicate more humanly? I'm reminded of a concept that I learned a long time ago, and it's something I talk about in my keynotes. It's something I talk about in my leadership workshops. And it's really, I think it's a mindset, but it's a mindset that you need to apply to communication. And that mindset is kindness with candor. I think the greatest leaders in any organization in this country, across the world, they exude kindness with candor. Because kindness with candor means you are genuine with people, you are polite, you try to massage information the right way so that people can accept it. But you're also truthful, and you also recognize the realities of whatever sort of communication that you might have to have at that time. You see this with performance conversations. Leaders who struggle with performance conversations, genuinely, on average, the majority of them struggle because they're not adopting an approach that is kindness with candor. If you struggle with performance conversations because you feel like you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings by telling them that they need to improve in something. So instead you kind of gloss over it, or you don't quite be direct. You say some things, but not exactly what they need to hear. Because kindness with candor also takes time and also takes trust. And sometimes leaders who struggle with that maybe don't have that trust built. But if we adopt this idea of kindness with candor in our communications, it goes a long way towards helping people, and certainly helping people during times of crisis. And I actually picked this up from a former senior executive at the company I worked with. I was at a leadership development conference. It was one of these 2-day leadership development conferences where some of the leaders in the organization would go and travel to and go through different workshops, the types that I lead now. But in this case, I was a attendee. And at the end of the 2 days, the senior executive got up and he wanted to kind of put a bow around the 2 days and make sure that we took in some of this information and we went back and applied it at work. And the organization at the time, I would say, had an issue with being too nice in the way that, like, people would interact with each other. And that sounds counterintuitive, to be too nice. But it was so much so that, like, this culture of just, like, saying what people wanted to hear but not what they needed was so pervasive that, you know, it actually had a name. People in the organization had a name for it, and it was called being nice. Oh, that's just being nice. And, you know, so if going back to the performance conversations, right? If there was too many people that were being told things that their leaders thought they might want to hear, but not necessarily the things that they needed to hear. Or you'd have business areas working together and they'd be working on a project, but, you know, you don't want to call somebody's baby ugly, their idea ugly. So you were just nice about it. But what happened is that then the best ideas never got put together, and we never moved forward on the things that needed to happen sooner than later. And so What he had said is, as he was talking about this culture of being nice, what he said was, I hope that what we will do in the near future is get away from the nice and get more towards kindness with candor. And I loved it. I felt it in my bones when he said it. It was like, yeah, that's what we need. You can be kind. You can have this, but we've got to have candor in our conversations. And so, you know, I remember at that time, I used to have to tell the leaders that I worked for, I used to have to, and if you had one of those initial meetings with somebody to kind of get to know each other a little bit and figure out how this working relationship is going to go, I would always tell them, like, hey, I need you to give me the bad stuff. I don't need you to tell me when I'm doing well. I appreciate it, certainly. A good job, a pat on the back, that's all great. And I will certainly welcome that. But more importantly, I need you to tell me when I could do something better. I need you to tell me when I did something well, but there's another way I could have handled it that might have been even better. I'm giving you permission to tell me the bad stuff and the stuff I need to work on. And I had to do that because I felt like too often I would get the nice conversation. And I didn't want that. I don't think that's how we grow. I don't think that's how we continue to get better and learn. So I wanted this. I thrived for this. And so kindness with candor in your communications doesn't look like what ERCOT was doing, talking about load shedding and megawatts of energy. No, kindness with candor in your communications looks like, hey, we know a lot of people are impacted by this right now. We are doing everything we can to help. But the reality is we're still in a bad spot. We don't anticipate getting back up to full speed for a couple of days. Trust us and know that we are doing everything we can. Communications like that, if they would have been shared with the public and been shared with people who are going through this, would have done so much more to help people understand what's happening than communications about load shedding and megawatts of energy. But sometimes that's what happens in organizations, in leaders, is we don't spend enough time, we spend so much time focusing on the message and what we think we need to say that we don't spend enough time thinking about the human component of the people who are gonna receive it. And so kindness with candor is a mindset. It's a mindset that we have to have, not just in our communications, but really, quite frankly, in our approach to work, in our approach to relationships, in our approach to parenting. I mean, another thing I talk a lot about from in stage and in communications is around this whole generational divide, you know, the baby boomers and millennials. And I typically try to play both sides. I try to, you know, give messages to both. But without a doubt, the thing that the baby boomers love to come tell me after a keynote or a workshop is, oh, but these young people and their participation ribbons, and, you know, they want participation ribbons for 12th place. First off, baby boomers, you guys are the ones who bought the trophies and the ribbons, so I don't even want to hear that argument. But you're right. I don't believe in those participation ribbons because I don't think that's kindness with candor. Kindness with candor in children is saying, hey, I am so proud of you. You did your best. You did amazing. I'm so happy with how hard you tried. I'm so happy with the improvements that you're making. That's kindness. But the candor is, hey, unfortunately, we still got to keep working. We didn't quite get there. 12th place doesn't get a trophy. You know, that's sort of my belief. That, you know, other people can have different opinions about how you want to, you know, parent and how you want to, but that's my belief that kindness with candor isn't participation ribbons. So, if we want to deliver kindness with candor in our communications, there's a couple of things we can do, and the first is we have to be curious. To deliver kindness with candor, you have to be a curious person. And I'm not saying that this would have helped in the situation of ERCOT. You know, they're dealing in a crisis mode. But well before you ever get to a crisis situation in your leadership or in your parenting or in your relationships, you have to be curious. There was a company I worked with in Wisconsin a couple years ago now, and they had a mantra at their company that I loved. It was, be curious, not certain. And the idea was they wanted all of their employees to be curious, be willing to listen to other ideas. Don't live in a world of certainty where just because we tried something 5 years ago and it didn't work, it doesn't mean it's not going to work now. We have to be curious. And that's something I've also adopted for myself. And when I go out and I teach workshops, and is how do we be curious? And it's not rocket science, people. It's pretty simple. Being curious means being willing to listen. And if you think of kindness with candor, kindness really starts with listening too. When you think of the people who you maybe look up to or are great relationship builders, and there's a kindness component to it that you could appreciate, I'm willing to bet they're listening. They're good listeners. I'm willing to bet they ask questions about you. That's curiosity. And so curiosity, being curious, I think really shows an interest in other people. It's also genuine. You know, I always like the idea of when you go and you meet somebody new, instead of asking the, oh, well, hey, what do you do question? Like asking them a different question that's off the cuff, it really shows more genuine interest in them. So, you know, asking them specific questions. If you want to go the work route, asking them more specific questions about what they actually do. Or my favorite is asking people what they like to do for fun, because it kind of gets that sort of wheel turning a little bit. But when you're curious, when you adopt this mentality of kindness with candor, when you're willing to be curious about somebody else, that's where it builds trust. Trust is built off of that. You can't have candid conversations without trust. So I think as leaders, if we can jump on this idea of being curious every day in our interactions, in our relationships, in our leadership, then not only will we start building trust with those people, will it come across as genuine and give us sort of genuine energy towards that relationship, but it puts us on the path where we can have communications that are kind, but with candor, where we can have the conversations that people need to hear and do it. And sometimes if it's a poor performance conversation, we can have that tough conversation because the people who might be receiving that understand that it's coming from a place of genuine interest, genuine care, kindness, and that maybe that performance conversation that doesn't feel so good is intended to help that person grow and turn things around in the right direction. So if we do those things, if we have that mindset of kindness with candor, if we adopt that every day, build on that through curiosity and in that genuine interest that we show other people, I think we're going to have more genuine conversations with each other. It's going to help in our leadership. And from the standpoint of at least ERCOT and what happened here in Texas, if we can just be real with people and give them the information that they need to hear, that makes sense, that they can adopt, then maybe people would have felt a little bit better going through this process than we recently did. So, but look, I hope it's in the rear view. I've got wishful thoughts and hoping for the best for a lot of people as they start to uncover the damage that's transpired. But you know, at least today, as I look out the window here in Texas, it is 60 degrees. Things are thawing out. People's water is coming back into their house. So, you know, hopefully disaster averted and with the least amount of damage as possible. But I will tell you one thing. Texas needs to learn from the northern states about how to handle this stuff because, whoo, it's been a trip. It's been a trip. It's been a great week. It's been a great week if we keep the perspective right on the right things. So I hope you've enjoyed that. I will be back to having guests on future episodes because of the snowstorm. I did have to cancel 3 recordings. We're getting those rescheduled. And so I'm looking forward to dropping those episodes here in the coming weeks. It's going to be some good ones. But if you've enjoyed this, if you are listening to this, please do me a favor. Rate it on whatever platform you're listening to. Apple's the big one there. Download the episodes, subscribe so that they just show up to you when we drop them. But leave me a comment. Let me know what you're getting from this, what you'd like to hear. If you have guest suggestions, do that as well too. Just engage, if you will. Let me know what you're getting from it and what you'd like to hear. And we'll continue to have this conversation. Looking forward to the future ones. Thank you so much for listening and have a great rest of the week.